Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Interview Number 8. I am Eleanor Mermelstein. I am with my partner, Sylvia Buses, interviewing Saul Weisberg at the United Jewish Federation Building on Wednesday, December 18, 1985. Saul, you have been so actively involved in everything that has gone on in the Pittsburgh Jewish community since you joined the staff of UJF in 1947. As I look back on our previous interviews, I can think of no activity or merger you have not discussed thoroughly. In our last interview, you told us about various UJF professional leaders and how they related to the community. Would you like now to share with us your thoughts concerning the relationship between the lay people and the professionals?
Yes, we talked about that being an appropriate subject. I want to preface my remarks by making sure that what I say doesn't turn into a lecture. The one thing I want to do is not sound like I'm lecturing on that particular subject, which it so happens lends itself to that sort of style. So maybe what I'll try to do is focus on some personal, so to speak, relationships I had with individuals, and maybe in a way use those to highlight what I conceive to be the substance of relationships between layperson and professional. I will lecture to this extent, though, by saying that, as is true for that matter of relationship among professionals, the relationship between layperson and professional really does go to the heart of the operation of the Federation, and I think of any major nonprofit organization where you do have, on the one hand, paid professionals, and on the other hand, volunteers. Volunteers ranging from those who give only a relatively brief and limited amount of time to those who give vast amounts of energy and indeed expertise. My relationship with lay people has been a very satisfactory one. I use that to mean that it's been both satisfying and been on the whole without any significant or long-lasting friction. As a matter of fact, I say this to the credit of the lay people, and to some extent to my own credit. Over all the years that I was with the Federation as a paid professional, there was only one instance where, in a sense, I was wounded by a layperson who I thought treated me with, shall we say, without dignity or whatever the appropriate term might be. It goes back many years, and I won't go into the incident. It's really no point to it. As I say, I'm only mentioning it to indicate how rare that has been. On the whole, I think, and I am lecturing, I know, I'm going to find it difficult not to. But on the whole, as I think back over it, I think that it has been amazing to me how restrained and how considerate and thoughtful, generally speaking, lay people have been with professionals. And on the whole, in years gone by, I don't think it's true any longer, by the way, in years gone by, how patient they have been on instances with what I consider to be at least, shall we say, incompetent professionals. I have very mixed feelings about that, by the way, and when I talk about incompetence. I go back to school of thought which forgives, so to speak, a certain amount of incompetence, et cetera, because of compassion and so forth. On the other hand, I recognize that today, particularly, federations have become very much almost a small, or not so small anymore, corporation where efficiency as distinct from effectiveness, but both of them perhaps, efficiency and effectiveness have become very much a part of what is demanded by the layperson, and which the professional has to give. I had a variety of relationships with lay people. One example of kind of dense, in a sense, relationship that, you understand what I mean, texture-wise, I had, covering many, many years, was Irving Halpern, for instance. I mentioned this in the past, but I'll stress it again, because one of my tasks, as is the task of any professional with an organization such as the Federation, and I think any nonprofit organization of consequence, one of my tasks was to try very hard to involve laypersons, but particularly young laypersons who seem to have potential in the way of resources, in the way of intelligence, in the way of leadership, and so forth. Actually, I staffed for many years a leadership development program, which was designed to do that, where we had a fair amount of success. Program, I think today is much more elaborate than it was years ago, as is everything in the Federation, I think. But Irving Halpern was a member of the Halpern family, which was for many, many years, even when while Irving's father was alive and after his father died, for many years was one of the major contributors to the Federation and one of the best known families in the Jewish communal society, synagogue, federation, other organizations. Julius, that was the father, died. He was survived by a brother, Alfie, and two sons, Bernie and Irv. Bernie, with whom I had a very close and intimate relationship, had been active in federation for many years and became president of the monitor and so forth. Irving was completely outside the Federation, and as far as I know, completely outside any activity in the Jewish community. But he's only, I don't know, a few years younger than Bernie, a person obviously of strong ideas and will, and obviously person who would have a great deal to say about the Halpern gift, as well as a person who should have a great deal to contribute to Federation. So, as I said the other day, I thought I did anyway, I looked for ways to involve Irving, and when Vicar Fulham was being reorganized as a result of the Shep study, which I described the other day, I thought of Irving as being a person to turn to involve in that program, and then indirectly that would lead him eventually into Federation. And I describe it this way because the process or the procedure is so important here. I called her and asked if I could have lunch with him. And it's an interesting business because a layperson could do it or a professional could do it. I felt in that instance that it was appropriate and for me to call her. And I did call him. We had lunch together. I described what I was interested in and what I hoped he would become interested in. And he was responsive. It was obvious that even though he had suppressed it or concealed it, that he had some interest in becoming involved in Federation. became involved in Bicker Holum, then went on to become its president. Although that venture eventually became unsuccessful, in the meantime, became involved then in Federation and went on eventually to become chairman of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee, which, as a matter of fact, just came to an end. That is, his chairmanship just came to an end in the last few months. The reason I point to that is because I did have a very close relationship with him, and it was interesting to watch the development of someone who, in the early years, despite the fact that he was already, I believe, a successful and substantial businessman in his own right, and certainly an individual, as I said earlier, of strong ideas and so forth, nevertheless, in the early years, he was, I don't know if I should use the word timid, but certainly reticent in offering his own judgments and proposing his own initiatives and so forth. And certainly he was reticent and responsive, so to speak, to my suggestions in those early years rather than being aggressive in his own right. He was, I'll use the term, although I'm not happy about it because it could be subject to misinterpretation, but in the relationship he was subordinate, so to speak. But as years went by, he grew. He developed, and the reason I'm mentioning that is because part of the professional activity, part of my activity, was to attempt very hard to see to it that that's exactly what did happen, and that is that he should develop self-confidence, and that whereas initially he would, as I said, be timid about offering his own suggestions or even in a meeting where he was chairing, constantly look, so to speak, to the persons, well, in that case would be me, who was helping him staff, so to speak, the meeting. Eventually, he was able to stand very directly on his own feet. And as I understand it, although in the last several years I was not part of that, but in the last several years, he certainly was very much in charge of the process of in position of being chairman of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee. And the relationship, as far as I know, I have no way of knowing how Irv saw it. We never discussed it in those terms. But the relationship, as far as I could see, even though it was very much, I thought, a learning process, it could have been subject to friction, et cetera, since he was being asked to volunteer services and I was being paid. That did not take place. I'm sure Sylvia, I don't know how much experience you have with nonprofit organizations, Elmer, but I know Sylvia supports that a great deal. And I think Sylvia probably knows exactly what I'm talking about because I'm sure she's seen many young women, and I know some myself, who started out with the same shyness and restraint and who slowly but surely have grown and blossomed and eventually become what is properly termed leaders. On the other hand, there are some young or old, for that matter, lay people who don't exercise restraint from the very beginning. And they can be people who can be very difficult for relationships between lay people and professionals. I remember one instance, I don't know if I've mentioned this in the past or not, when Bob Hiller came to Pittsburgh, I may have mentioned this in the past, came to a meeting where Al Wilner was present. Al didn't have too much to do with the Federation, but he was a very substantial attorney in his own right. I forget what the subject was, but Al volunteered a proposal which really was quite, how shall I put it, almost outlandish, and certainly very much, well, I'll put it differently, impossible of fulfillment, let's put it that way. Obviously, to any sophisticated professional, even layperson, a proposal that had no merit, Bob scoffed at it publicly, and Al Wilner, being a very, as I said, successful and a substantial citizen and attorney, took umbrage. He took lots of umbrage and took it publicly. And I think, by the way, he probably taught Bob a lesson. Bob was still young and so forth. Bob really didn't treat him with respect, which is something that a professional or a layperson, for that matter, but certainly a professional, should always be very, very careful to do. This was one of the few times I've seen a layperson so openly aggressive and angry when a professional operated as Bob did in that instance. Usually the lay people control themselves wisely or unwisely. I had an extraordinary relationship, which I won't go into too much detail with here because I've talked about it in the past, with a president of another agency. That's really sort of unusual. In that case, it was Harry Kamen, who, as I've already said, was president and for a long time chief, so to speak, in command of the Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged at a time when the Jewish Home and the Federation, in many different ways, were very much at sword's points. But nevertheless, during this long period of hostility and antagonism, Harry Kamen and I managed to have really a very close relationship. I saw him I'll put it differently. I recognized that he was a very effective, and he is, person. And he was in control of the home, and in order for Federation to accomplish certain things, it was important that we have some relationship with the home. And also, and here my confidence was misplaced, I hoped that in the long run, the relationship between Kamen and myself would lead to a closer relationship between Federation and the home as agency, so to speak. And that didn't take place until the home got into severe financial difficulties, and they had to come to the Federation then for assistance. At that point, and for several years prior to that, Harry Kamen was no longer in control of the home, but Joe Rubenstein was. If Harry Kamen had remained in control, there might have been some differences. But Joe Rubenstein had come into control. And I don't mind saying this, because it's relevant in terms of relationships, that I was never able to have any sort of relationship with Joe Rubenstein. He very honestly and frankly mistrusted me, whether that was because I had this relationship with Harry Kamen or because he had other feelings about, or because his feelings came from some other sources that I'm not aware of. But anyway, he very clearly mistrusted me and obviously thought that I was hostile to home. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you this story, and that is that after the home came to the Federation for assistance, when the home became in serious financial trouble, Bill Kahn was still here. The original contacts were really between Joe on the one hand and Bill Kahn on the other. Those two spent a lot of time together, and this is demonstrating, again, professional lay relationship. Joe was president at that point of the home, and it's very much, because the home operates that way, very much in command. The home for many years always had an individual who was in command. It was Kamen for a long time, and then Joe succeeded him. And Joe's word, so to speak, was law. It was not the kind of group or committee consensus that you find very often. After, and for a while, I was excluded from the process of that was going on between Federation and the home. Finally, in my presence, over the phone, Bill asked Joe Rubenstein one day if he would mind if I were brought into the process. Bill wanted me to be part of it for obvious reasons, I think. And Joe said over the phone, well, he thought he might mind, but he would be the only one on the committee of the home. So I then became part of the process. I say that because but interestingly enough, and Sylvia might even remember this because I'm quite sure she was at the meeting, for a while I worked with Joe, and we developed a certain kind of relationship, and at a particular meeting that took place, I forget what it was, I wrote something for Joe, and Joe then at the meeting suddenly praised me at great length and said he was quite amazed. You remember that, Sylvia, by any chance? No?
I think it was that joint committee between the Home and the Federation. I think so.
Anyway, it was quite startling. Relationships that I had, of course, the closest relationships I had, of course, were with the chairman, one after another, of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee. And they, generally speaking, those were my closest relationships, starting way back with Bernard Kaplan, who was really the first chairman, and including Bernard Halpern and Milton Porter and Leon Netzer, by the way, and Irving Halpern, and Saul Shapiro was the chairman at one point. Somehow or other, Sidney missed that. the only thing he ever missed. And they were very close relationships, very thoughtful relationships. I always felt, and I think on the whole, if I may say so, with undue immodesty, that one of my tasks as chairman of chairman of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee, and in fact, in all my relationships, I think back over it with at least the leaders of the Federation, that my job was went well beyond what might be called assembling data and statistics and organizing them and so forth, but rather that my job was to attend to broaden as much as possible the understanding that these individuals had not only a Federation, but indeed even of Jewish ideals, Jewish thought, and of the totality, so to speak, of the Jewish life. One of the reasons why, I guess I've talked about this. Let me start over again on this point. Over the years, I wrote an awful lot of speeches for a lot of Jewish leaders. So I guess I've said that here.
Yes.
But it's true. I really did write a lot. And I wrote them not just for, in those instances, where in a sense was part of my job, but I wrote them in different contexts. I wrote them, for instance, many times for presidents.
You were the ghostwriter.
Even though it would normally have been done either by the executive vice president, executive director, or perhaps by the public relations director. I remember writing one many years ago. I really shouldn't say this, but I'll put it in anyway. I remember writing one years ago for Al Rogal. I wrote a lot of speeches for Al over the years. Some of them were pretty good, too. By that, I mean that Al got some very good compliments on them. but I was always amused that Al was very sensitive to the problem that Jerry Sirocher, had also written something. This was, Sroka was already executive and Al was president, and this was going to be a speech to, at the annual meeting. So Al and I wrote one for Al, and then Al and I got together, and we attempted to put the speech together, the two speeches together, the one by Sroka and the one by mine, by me, so that it wouldn't be obvious to Jerry, that is to Sroka, that his speech had been superseded, so to speak, by mine. But one of the reasons, this is what I was trying to say, one of the reasons why I did that, I enjoyed it, by the way, number one. Number two, I would never say no, and somewhere along the line, some people got the idea that I could write that sort of nonfiction stuff fairly well, and came to me and so forth. But one of the reasons why I really was rather pleased to do it was because it enabled me to put onto paper ideas and thoughts and so forth, which the person, president, chairman, whatever he might be, who was delivering this speech, would have to assimilate or at least familiarize himself with. And it was really a way, again, I'm being both immodest and almost contemptuous. Well, it's too strong a word.
Not contemptuous. Come on, so.
But it was a way of educating, so to speak, the lay people who were delivering the speeches. It was particularly when, I want to go back on that for one thing, to say that it wasn't a matter, and this is very important, I insisted on that, it wasn't a matter where I would write a speech and hand it over to the president or to the chairman or whatever the case may be. In just about every instance possible, I always insisted that I would meet with the person for whom I was writing this speech ahead of time and review what the content of the speech should be. So that you see, it was a process not of my handing something to a layperson, but rather a process of interaction, and I thought a very valuable one to the layperson.
I can see where you have contributed greatly to the success of the lay people.
You mean in terms of their image? Could be. Could be. That's part of the job, I hope. I mean it. I think that's a very important point. I think that the strength of the Federation does depend to a very large extent, not to a large extent, but certainly partially, on the image that the lay people do present. And what they say in public, and you can't control how they say it, but what they say in public has a great deal to do with their image. The one thing I don't want to come out of these particular paragraphs is any notion that these lay people were limited in any way. They did write, and this is true, they did write as well as I did. But they were people of the most extraordinary, and I mean this, confidence, and in many different ways. They had strength of opinion, they had knowledge, they had understanding, they had goodwill, and so forth. Sydney and Sylvia herself, for that matter, happen to be perfect examples of that. Some of the lay people may or may have thought that they could write better than I could, or as well, but limitations of time would have prevented that, even if they could. So in most instances, they were grateful to allow me to do that. And that's a standard, by the way, in our modern life. Abe Lincoln wrote, I was reading about Lincoln, Abe Lincoln, you know, wrote his stuff himself, maybe. But today, as everybody knows, ghostwriters and speechwriters are a way of life, for better or for worse.
Now that you've officially retired from the UJF, how do you view your accomplishments and your successes I'm sure you've had many of them. I see that we're almost at the end of the tape, so this will give you food for thought.
I could have talked about Sydney.
You can talk about Sydney on the other side. All right.
I do want to make a comment about the women, though. Should I, or should I wait?
We're just really almost there. Hate to cut you off in the middle of a sentence.
Oh, that's all right. It doesn't bother me.